chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are rest make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got quite a few good news items this evening. And also, I want to wish everyone a happy new year. This is New Year's Eve. We're broadcasting a little late. We had a few problems, car problems, but we've got that back on track now. I had a good friend that came over and helped me get that done. I want to thank him very much. But anyway, we're back on the air again, and we've got some really good clips to review with you and make comments on. And we're going to start off with Francis Borrell interview recently with Alex Jones, and they're talking about a health tyranny, and that's what Francis Borrell is good. He's really right on top of this. And then we're going to bring forth some of the players that are helping to bring about this health tyranny. So here we go with Francis Borrell.
Well, we couldn't have a more important, informative guest on today to cover the waterfront. He's Dr. Francis Borrell. He's an author, researcher, lawyer. Took the special PhD, only one person gets a year at Harvard, that Henry Kissinger and Zbigniew Brzezinski took, that teaches them how the whole New World Order works. He was the top war crimes prosecutor of people like Slobodan Milosevic at the UN. He wrote the U.S. law on chemical and biological weapons and contributed to the world law. And he's here to talk about the waterfront today, the huge escalation, as he pointed out, on the escalation ladder the Pentagon uses to full-on total nuclear war. We'll also look at the gain of function coming out, the fact that it's now confirmed the deep state was censoring scientists and doctors and others that were exposing the truth. And we'll also look at the poison COVID shots and so much more with him, the Twitter files. There's so much to cover. So I'm going to try to let Dr. Borrell start wherever he wishes. And it's great to have him on with us here today. So, Dr. Borrell, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Alex. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy holidays there to all your audience.
I know you're not about being vindicated. You don't want the credit, but you also need folks to know the gravitas. You're a serious guy. You were on the air in late January and early February 2020 on my show and other shows, predicting it was out of a lab, predicting the shots would be poison, predicting war would follow, predicting world ID cards, predicting the shots would cause mass death. So out of all the pantheon of great people, the Dr. Robert Malones and the Dr. Michael, you know, Yedons, you have been the most on target and the early bird in all this. So I know you want to get into the war in Ukraine and expanding and that existential threat. I want to hit that. But first, total vindication, Dr. Borrell. It's like you had a crystal ball.
Well, Alex, a lot of this credit goes to you because you're the only person in the mainstream news media that would let me talk about these things. I first blew the whistle on it on January 24, 2020, in a worldwide alert. The dangers here that COVID-19 was an offensive biological warfare weapon that had leaked out of the Wuhan BSL-4. And then later on your program, I said that any Franken-shots that big pharma developed here would be more dangerous than useless. And then later on your show, I said messenger RNA is very powerful stuff to inject into your body, and it could discombobulate your entire genetic system. Now, I said that very early on, as you correctly pointed out, in early February to you and on InfoWars and some of your colleagues. So kudos to you and to InfoWars for letting me speak the truth to the American people.
But how did you, I mean, I know you wrote the bioweapons laws and were a top prosecutor at the UN, but just how did you nail it? So I mean, you totally nailed it.
Well, we've discussed this before. I think the most important point now from my perspective are these proposed regulations by the World Health Authority and also the proposed pandemic treaty by the World Health Organization that are now under consideration over in Geneva. I have read both the regulations and the treaty. According to either one or both, they will establish a scientific and medical police state that will cover the entire world and that will usurp and negate the sovereignty of the United States of America as well as the sovereignty of the states of the Union under the 10th Amendment of the United States Constitution and penetrate right down to our primary care physicians. You will have Dr. Tedros there, the WHO, telling our medical doctors how to treat us. This will be a one-way path to the cemetery for all Americans. And right now, we must get organized to defeat the WHO regulations and the WHO treaty on future
pandemics. And let's be clear, you're a guy that writes U.S. and U.N. regulations. There couldn't be a better guest to describe this. And you've read the treaty, you've read the regulations, and you're saying what we've been hearing is true, that it is a worldwide biomedical, big pharma, corporate police state.
That's correct. And as a matter of fact, Alex, I've researched, studied, and taught international organizations starting from my student days at Harvard Law School up until today, beginning with the first Hague Peace Conference of 1899 up through and including the United Nations Organization. You can read about this in my book, Foundations of World Order, Duke University Press, 1999, which was half of my Ph.D. Dissertation at Harvard. So, yes, I've done this work professionally for all those years. Indeed, the most insidious part of the WHO treaty, from my perspective, is that the concluding clause has been drafted so that it will come into effect immediately upon signature by Biden's delegate. Let me repeat that. It will come into effect immediately upon signature for Biden's delegate, despite the requirements of the United States Constitution that all treaties must receive the advice and consent of the United States Senate. Usurpation of our Constitution, as well as the 10th Amendment, guaranteeing that all rights not delegated to the federal government reside in the hands of the states, the Union, or the people. And so what will happen under this treaty and also under the regulations, people like Governor DeSantis, Governor Abbott, and others, who do not accept the party line coming out of the CDC will be sidestepped and usurped.
And that was my next question. When we come back from break, we'll get into the world treaty and more, and then get into the war in Ukraine. That's currently the big, obviously the front burner threat. But what do you make of the German vice president saying we need investigations, criminal investigations? The Supreme Court 3 days ago greenlighting criminal investigations in Florida. That's got to be encouraging.
Right. I have read the request for a grand jury that Governor DeSantis filed with the Florida Supreme Court. And then I have read the terms of reference given by the Florida Supreme Court. They are broad enough, in my opinion, to include indictments against everyone involved here for murder and conspiracy to commit murder in accordance with Florida law. And I certainly would encourage...
Dr. Boyle, stay there. I'm going to try to shut up, give you the floor. Let's come back with that, finish up with COVID, and then get into the World War III situation and that ladder of escalation you warned of 2 months ago on the show that we've now moved up several rooms on. Wow. Dr. Francis A. Boyle's our guest. Stay with us.
You notice he said about tyrants and they're using the health means by which to become tyrants. Well, here's a really good example of Benjamin Netanyahu, who's recently taken over again the reins as Prime Minister of Israel. And here's what he has to say from his own lips about having records on everyone. And, oh, this is going to revolutionize the way things are managed. And it just so happens Israel has the worst vaccination record. They got more higher percentage of vaccinated with the vaccines, and they've got a dreadful health rate over there. So here we go with Benjamin Netanyahu, our buddy. It's going to help us to new heights of good healthness.
We came out of COVID first. I described that in my book, my conversations with Albert Bourla of Pfizer, and I persuaded him to give tiny Israel the necessary vaccines to get us out first from the COVID. And the reason I could do that is because we have a database, 98%, a medical database, 98% of our population has digitized medical records and little card. And anywhere you go in any hospital in Israel, north, south, doesn't make any difference. Boom, you punch it in and you know everything about this patient for the last 20 years. I said, we'll use that to tell you whether these vaccines, what do they do to people, not individual people, not with their individual identities, but statistically, what does it do to people with meningitis? What does it do to people with high blood pressure? What is it? You know, you want to know that. So Israel became, if you will, the lab for Pfizer.
By using the people in Israel, the Jews, the Christians, the Muslims, as guinea pigs under forced injections, lockdowns, with a genetic database to see what the mutagenic injections do to the host body. Benjamin Netanyahu is not stupid. And he just got reelected yesterday to the Knesset, the leader of Israel. And I just so happened to come across a clip of him from a few weeks ago that I hadn't seen when he went on Jordan Peterson's podcast. We'll play a clip in a moment. And it's only 2 minutes long. And it's filled with lies. He says Israel has this national ID card that tracks everything our citizens do, health-wise. That's true. But he says that way we could, you know, make sure it was safe. That way we could track what it was going to do. That way we would know what the health effects of the shot were. But they've used that database and the claims of that database being there as the pretext to say then later that it was totally safe when Israel had the worst adverse reactions of any country in the world. Look it up. We've shown the statistics from the UN, from Israel, from the United States, from Canada, from them all. Israel had amongst the highest injection rates of the so-called shot in the world that was experimental and doesn't protect you and erases your immune system. And it is a huge, huge controversy in Israel, and the Israelis are pissed off, and rightfully so, because there they are locked in that country. And remember, the government tried to roll out vaccine passports, tried to say it was forced, tried to make people take it. I was telling you at the time, it'll be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 shots a year because Bill Gates had said it 2.5 years ago that you'll have to have these on a routine basis because it'll lower your immune system. Bill Gates said that. Scientists at Pfizer and Moderna said that. They giggled and laughed and said the stock's going to go way up because you're always going to have to take this now. And the more you take it, the more you get sick. And then there's Benjamin Netanyahu saying, I used my country like a lab experiment, meaning He used the Israeli people, the Jewish people that live there, and the Christians and the Muslims and others as a lab experiment. Well, I'm not a lab experiment. And people in Israel aren't a lab experiment. And when this was done to black people, was Tuskegee, it was illegal. And what was done here, and when our troops were made to take it, the federal courts have ruled that was illegal because you can't make troops take an experimental shot. So what our government did was illegal. What the Israeli government did was illegal. What the UK government's done is illegal. What the Australian and Canadian and German government and all the rest of them have done is absolutely illegal. And they used Israel, like China, as a beta test of lab rats to not just give them the poison shot, but to track everybody and to ban protest and to attack the Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox Jewish groups that are smart and were following Leviticus and said, we're not taking that into our bodies. So shame on Benjamin Netanyahu and shame on the evil leaders of Israel that went along with this and used their people that believe they're there for their protection and safety that have come there fleeing persecution in many cases to only be persecuted at an even greater level than what Joseph Mengele did. Joseph Mengele reportedly did tests on over 50,000 people, killed more than 10,000. He's known as the Angel of Death. How many Israelis got forcibly injected or intimidated into it? How many got sick and died? How many are sick and dying now? So the test sites were Israel, Italy, Singapore, Australia, New Zealand, Communist China. And that's all this was a giant exercise in tyranny. The Israeli people and the people of the world are all being targeted by the same global world government operation with Albert Bourla and Bill Gates at the head of it. And Benjamin Netanyahu is nothing but their little pimp. Here's the clip.
Give you one example so you'll see, because I don't want to bore you with detailed plans, but they are detailed in my mind. We came out of COVID first. I described that in my book, my conversations with Albert Bourla of Pfizer, and I persuaded him to give tiny Israel the necessary vaccines to get us out first from the COVID. And the reason I could do that is because we have a database, 98%, a medical database. 98% of our population has digitized medical records and little card. And anywhere you go in any hospital in Israel, north, south, doesn't make any difference. Boom, you punch it in and you know everything about this patient for the last 20 years. I said, we'll use that to tell you whether these vaccines, what do they do to people, not individual people, not with their individual identities, but statistically, what does it do to people with, meningitis? What does it do to people with high blood pressure? What is it? You know, you want to know that. So Israel became, if you will, the lab for Pfizer. And that's how we did it. We got it out and we gave the information to the world, not only been published in medical magazines and so on. That's a database we have. I intend to bring on that database of personal medical records for entire population, a genetic database, genomes, okay? Give me a saliva sample. Volunteer. But I'm sure most people would do it. Maybe we'll pay them. Now we have a genetic record on a medical record of a robust population. You have to have diversified populations. We have people from 100 lands. This is a very powerful engine. Now let pharma companies, let medical companies, let them run algorithms on this database, okay? I'm telling you right away that I'll give preference for a few years to Israeli firms, but you can create, and then to the world, but you can create, a biotechnological industry that is unheard of right now, unheard of, unimagined even. And these are just the examples. So we can become a lot, stave off Iran, become a light unto the nations in groundbreaking.
A light unto the nations by using the people in Israel, the Jews, the Christians, the Muslims, as guinea pigs under forced injections, lockdowns, with a genetic database to see what the mutagenic injections do to the host body.
Yeah, the Israelis are headed up by Benjamin Netanyahu are going to really help us. And they especially have records on everybody in Israel. And they were the highest percentage of vaccinated people in the world. And they've got one of the biggest health problems in the world right now. More people sick and everything else that it's hard to contend with. But anyway, what we have next is an interview of Jeff Rentz with Erica Kahn, and they're talking about how this vaccine and our viruses and so forth have affected our nervous systems. Our autonomous nervous system is what they're talking about in tonight's program, and we've got a short clip of that, and I'll put the complete interview up on our website. So come in to thesecrettruth.com, and you'll be able to hear the entire interview with Erica Kahn. This is just a short clip. Here we go. And they're talking about the autonomous nervous system and how this is affecting our nervous system overall. And it's really, that's why maybe we have some of these sudden death episodes and experiences. But here we go with them.
I have been feeling for a long time when I've looked at these videos, as have you, I'm sure, of people standing up and all of a sudden planting their faces on concrete, etc. They die suddenly. They're gone. And I would always say over and over again, it looks like a main circuit breaker has been disconnected and the person is no longer alive. A switch has been thrown or disabled and these people are gone. And I said, this looks like a bioelectric physiological short of the autonomic nervous system. Maybe short isn't the right word. I don't know. A shutoff. How's that? Well, let's bring on my blushing partner here. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Jeff. Blushing,
atta
yeah.
Girl. I see. I can see. I see. I see. And I've been talking about this for a long time. So is Erica. And yes, we understand the amyloid clots can certainly fill up a key artery and cause people to go down. But it looked to me from the beginning as if this was something to do with the autonomic nervous system. And some of you are saying, what is the autonomic nervous system? Well, let me just read this little bitty bit from Wikipedia, which will never lie to you. All right, well, this is true, though. The autonomic nervous system, formerly referred to as the vegetative nervous system, is a division of the peripheral nervous system that supplies internal organs, smooth muscle, and glands. The autonomic nervous system is a control system that acts largely unconsciously and regulates bodily functions such as your heart rate. It tells your heart to beat and how fast to beat. It tells you when to breathe. It also regulates your digestion, your pupillary response, urination, sexual arousal. The autonomic nervous system is an extraordinary system which is headquartered in the brain stem. Now, if we went up to 100 people on the streets and asked them to put their finger on their brain stem, I'm not knocking anybody, but I would say at least half couldn't do it, maybe more. And depending on what neighborhood you're in, maybe you'll end up with zero. It's a crucial part of your body that is absolutely given the highest priority in terms of proper blood flow, circulation, nutrition, and oxygen. It has to have it. Anything you want to add to that? Then I'm going to read a little bit from this this paper.
No, you've explained it very well. It's a critical part of maintaining all bodily functions. Things you don't have
now
to think about.
Right. If I think about, okay, I have an itch on my head. I want to scratch my head. I think my hand comes up, hopefully, and scratches the appropriate location. All right, that's not autonomic nervous function. That's a chosen, voluntary request and response that your body is able to fulfill. All right, this has to do with long COVID, but I do believe that long COVID and autonomic nervous dysfunction are rather similar. Okay? Now, anyone who's been around the scientific literature on chronic fatigue syndrome, for example, knows that dysautonomia, the dysregulation of the autonomic nervous system, is common. Two different kinds of orthostatic intolerance, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, POTS, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, POTS, P-O-T-S, and neurally mediated hypotension have been found. Virtually everyone with chronic fatigue syndrome has reduced blood flow to the brain. And a low heart rate variability is ubiquitous as well. These are really important things. I'm going to jump down just a little bit here. Brainstem. All right, in case you don't know, if you put your finger on the side of your neck and push it straight in at the top, the very top of your spine, at the base of your brain, that's where your brain stem is. It actually forms the top of your spinal column. It's an extraordinary area that gets very little attention. The brain stem. But why, this article states, are these autonomic nervous system problems occurring? One might answer that they lie in the brain stem. The brain stem is the first recipient of all the sensory and motor signals from the spinal cord. What is your spinal cord? Every major organ of your body is connected to the spinal cord and controlled by the spinal cord from the brain on down. The brain stem is the first recipient of all the sensory and motor signals from the spinal cord. It regulates the very basic functions like breathing, heart rate, as I've said, etc. Okay? And there's much more. We talk about the vagus nerve as well, but I'm going to turn this over to my scientific pal here who can explain more about the brain stem. And why, I guess the first question, why has it escaped attention? Because the brain stem and autonomic damage, in my view, is the cause of many people dying suddenly and unexpectedly. It's like someone grabs a big switch. You've seen those old movie circuit breaker switches and pulls it from being engaged to disengaged. The switch is off. The autonomic nervous system is no longer functioning. Your heart stops beating on the spot. You stop breathing. And all the other things that were controlled by that are now under no control whatsoever. They're toast. You die, you're down, and you've died suddenly. Autonomic nervous system failure. That is a big part of this. It's getting no attention. So we're giving it attention, as is our wont. We do this often with things. This is a critical part of the puzzle about dying suddenly. All right? Go ahead.
Yeah. It is curious that there isn't more attention being given to this in the major circles. I think it is being discussed in lesser-known, lesser-publicized circles. But this virus, from the beginning, based on symptoms and subsequent autopsy reports, was shown to have some affinity for the nervous system, if it could get past the lungs and make its way into neural tissue. Many people, even if they didn't have a severe case of it, ended up having some sort of neurological complication later on. It could have been weeks, even months later after the initial infection. Right. So autopsy reports did conclude that the brain stem could harbor this virus in high amounts. And now, after the injections have been introduced, one of the complaints, one of the most common complaints, is people ending up with this condition called POTS, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, which is a form of dysautonomia, meaning the autonomic nervous system is dysregulated. And that by definition means that there's some injury to the vagus nerve and or brainstem. But I think doctors or medical professionals are just not really talking about that very much. I don't know that they're willing to admit that the spike itself is doing the damage, and we don't really know. I mean, the spike in it by itself is neurotropic, meaning it can make its way to nerves and cause neural dysfunction.
We can go further than that. It likes neurology.
Yes.
The spike likes neurology. It likes to go into nerves. It's like the herpes virus family. It likes to go into nerves.
It has several sequences on that cause it to be attracted to nerves, not the least of which is some of those rabies. I believe there was three sequences from the rabies G protein that would give it some affinity for nerve. It can bind to the nicotinic acetylcholine receptor, which is very prevalent on some nerve cells. And then I believe the HIV GP120 also has some affinity for neural tissue. But anyway, it's not uncommon for this virus and or the spike protein itself to have an affinity for nerves and kind of collect in the brainstem or in the vagus nerve. And this is likely what's causing sudden death in some people, and along with the symptoms of dizziness and brain fog and tachycardia, breathlessness. There's a whole long list of symptoms that go along with this umbrella term of POTS. But it could likely explain why people are dying suddenly, because the neural impulses coming out of the brainstem are trying to communicate with the heart, regulate the heartbeat, and regulate the vasculature. If that doesn't happen properly, you could result in sudden death. Just the heart doesn't beat. And interestingly, it would be difficult to get it restarted if there was still something impeding the neural impulses.
If there was damage to the brainstem and the autonomic system, you couldn't restart it. The heart is done. It's over. The system to control its beating is done. It's been damaged.
You can consult. Also, look up amyloid fibers on the web, too. Some of the people that are coming down with sicknesses are coming up with that also. But here we go with Robert Barnes, who defended some Amish farmers recently, and the government was trying to put them out of business because they were independently creating their own food system and food distribution, and boy, the feds didn't want that, but Robert Barnes beat them in every which way, and it was a major victory for the Amish and for Robert Barnes. Here we go with that interview.
Any of those cases are good. I mean, I think Amos's case is going to be a he's the Amish farmer who was covered by Tucker Carlson, who the government is coming after. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is coming after to stop him from making food the way his private membership association that buys his food wants it made. And it raises serious issues. I mean, basically, it's the government's attempt to usurp control and monopolize control of the food supply to such a degree that they get to determine and dictate what people eat and what people can eat, even against their own informed consent. So we got a partial settlement of, you know, existing issues. That was a good win for him. And but the case is a case everybody should pay attention to, because it's a case that's going to impact and determine whether or not we get to decide what goes into our body or the government does.
And for those that don't know, I'm a big meat eater, so are you. We get steaks all the time when you're here. They're making the big meat packers add all these chemicals and sterilants and antibacterials to the surface of the meat that's causing all sorts of medical problems and dead gut syndrome. And I mean, it's not good to take all these antibiotics and chemicals on a regular basis. If people want free associations to go out and decide what they want to do as adults, they want healthy, good raw milk and healthy, clean meat. Isn't that really the future revolution against the globalists? And expanding on that, if the Hopi tribe back in the 60s won their case to be able to take peyote as part of their religious ceremony that again, overrode federal law because Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion, freedom of the first says thereof. Then it goes on to the freedom of the press and the rest of it. Can't we just form a Christian church and say we believe in Leviticus and the Old Testament, that we're not going to eat tainted food and things that are GMO? Is it our religious rights? Even if we believe in God, folks, you have that right in the Constitution. Isn't that a real chink in their armor?
No doubt. I mean, really, it's sort of a threefold set of issues. First, it violates religious rights, the right to make and grow food the way your religious tradition holds, including that that's very broad under the federal law. That's any spiritual or conscientious tradition, not just a orthodox religious belief. And that's part one, is that there's people who make this food in this way and eat this food in this way for the prioritized purpose of serving their religious and conscientious beliefs. Then you have the second aspect of just freedom of association, for people to be able to associate together for the purposes of whatever it is, political, religious, or otherwise, being able to put into their bodies what they want as part of that bodily autonomy right, which is the same issue that's implicated in the vaccine mandate. And then third, you have the issue of people who, for medical necessity, people for bodily disability in some cases, need this food made in a certain way that's not the U.S. Department of Agriculture, that's not the government's way, that's not big slaughterhouses, that's not big commercial corporate big ag, that is made in the way that people like Amos Miller make it. They need it for their bodies to be able to survive because of their medical condition. So what the U.S. Department of Agriculture has been up to has been to discriminate against people based on their medical needs, deny people the right to bodily autonomy, deny people their right to a freedom of association and expression, and, as you note, the right to follow their religious and conscientious beliefs, both in how they make food and how they receive food.
Well, the Hopi Indians can take hallucinogens because they've done it for thousands of years. People should be able to eat good, clean beef and drink good, clean milk.
Exactly. That's what this is all about. And we also know, I mean, look at the Amish community. The Amish community lives longer on average and has almost every better healthy metric known to man than the communities that surround them. And the reasonable inference is that's because they determine their own medicine and they determine their own food, and that they're not injecting every single drug that the government wants to put into their our bodies, and they're not taking food the way the government wants it made, with these various preservatives and other chemicals that alter the food. They were, you know, the government was calling Amos Miller's food.
Stay right there. Tell us what they did to Amos for those that don't know when we come back. Robert Barnes, constitutional lawyer, joins this Friday edition of the Alex Jones Show. Robert, for people that don't know about the Amos Miller case, it got a lot of attention, but now you've had a major victory in the case as a lawyer there. This is a big deal. They've consolidated things into like five meatpacking systems. They're harassing any independent groups. It's just absolutely criminal activity. But this is a big victory. Finish up with that, and then you wanted to get into the incredibly important developments on the poison shot front. You concurred during the break. We were talking about the fact there's a mass awakening and politically criminal investigation starting in Europe and the U.S., led by DeSantis and the vice president of Germany. That's just a huge story. You're right in the middle of those lawsuits as well. So please continue.
Yeah, so Amos's case is big because the feds were trying to use it as an example to shut down the ability to make food the way people want food made. I mean, what was unique about this case is it was the first case I'm aware of where the U.S. government sued where nobody was complaining about the food made. That, in fact, just the opposite. People wanted food made exactly the way Amos Miller made it. Years of zero complaints from anybody, and they were actually seeking out Amos because he's an Amish farmer in Pennsylvania who makes food in a way that doesn't have a bunch of chemicals added to it. I mean, the irony is they were calling his food, quote unquote, adulterated. But in fact, his food was being made exactly the way his customers wanted it made under informed consent, which is the laws that were meant to govern food production and food marketing in the United States. And here, the food that's adulterated in the views of his customers is the food the USDA is trying to shove down everybody's throat. And you can see where this would go ultimately. If they could control food supply, if they could shut down Amos Miller's ability to make food the way his customers want it when he's one of the best at it, when he has had zero complaints or concerns by any customer ever, then they could effectively dictate food supply going forward. And what would happen is they could take the world's largest purchaser of agricultural food land in the past decade or so in the United States of America, one Bill Gates, and make him the determiner of what's safe for us to eat. And sooner or later, they would say, well, really, in the name of the environment, it's not safe for you to eat meat anymore. It's not safe for you to have milk the way you want it made anymore. You're going to have to get the fake meat that Bill Gates wants you to eat. That's the path they were going on. And this is all ironic because the U.S. Department of Agriculture, its legal authority, was supposed to just be a marketing labeling authority. This is why almost everybody who works for the U.S. Department of Agriculture has absolutely no experience in actual farming or real food. They're supposed to be making sure that if I buy a can of beans, it's a can of kidney beans, not a can of corn. That's what adulterated meant, was that something was in the food that's different than what I thought was there. It was all about informed consent, making sure the ordinary person got what they wanted. Now they're flipping that on its head by saying, no, we, the government, dictate and determine what food you can eat and what food you can't eat. And that's why Amos's ability there is basically right before Christmas, he was scheduled to go to jail with $300,000 and more in fines and penalties and a monetary judgment issued against him and his wife and his farm that could have led to bankrupting him, taking out his farm, and him sitting in jail while waiting to try to get the money together to get out. And the government ultimately agreed to a settlement that removed almost all of that. No $300,000 in fines, no jail, the release of food that had been arrested and seized previously so that he can get it to his people. And so it was very important on, you know, he not be in jail on Christmas and that we get, you know, keep his farm alive, keep it. And importantly, that customers and consumers continue to be able to purchase the food that they want. And it's a first big win on the first step, and the goal is to ultimately make that part of the permanent solution, not just a temporary solution, that other people could model, creating what's called a custom exception under the law, that everybody could get a custom license, could join together in various associations to purchase food the way they want it, and not the way the USDA says.
And here's a parallel. For folks that don't know, until about 20 years ago, there were laws making it very hard for small brewers to make their own craft beer, or making it hard for people to distill spirits. But states all over the country got rid of those laws, and now it's a giant industry of all the craft beers and whiskeys and drinks. Take Tito's. I've known Tito. He started Tito's 28 years ago. I interviewed him on Access TV right when he was making it in his garage. They just passed a law 2 years before that legalizing people making their own liquor, and then now it's the biggest vodka brand in the world. And I'm not, you know, they're just saying that's the greatest thing ever. The point is that we could do that with beef, we could do that with chicken, we could do that with organic farms, but we've got to get the regulators out of there. And Bill Gates is coming in heavily, trying to bring in regulations to basically ban classical organic farming. Now the left's saying organic farming is bad.
Oh, that's exactly what's happening. I mean, you see kind of an example of it in what Netanyahu was bragging about the other day, where he was talking about, you know, in Israel, he basically decided to allow the Israelis to be used as guinea pigs in a lab, is his own word, lab experiment for Pfizer, and that it was going to combine it with digital records, and that these, you know, this was going to be a chip on every person, that they were going to add genetic history to it, and that ultimately, if you control food supply, you control medicine, you control what goes into a person's body at some point. You control the human being itself, that we're all effectively nothing more than chattel. And that's what the USDA is trying to use the Amos Miller case to achieve. That's why, you know, it's thanks to all the people that supported Amos that he was able to push back, was able to get competent, capable counsel.
Absolutely. And now the enemy's on the run. So the moral of the story is when we take action, we win, we roll over, we die. What type of person is Amos Miller? I know they're not supposed to Amish to do interviews and things, and he's a pretty adherent Orthodox person, and that's a 400-year-old society from Switzerland and Germany that, you know, fled tyranny then to try to create freedom. Everywhere they go, they create massive wealth in the communities around them, almost no crime, live longer than anybody else. It seems like they're onto something. What type of person is Amos Miller?
Very nice guy, very quiet. I mean, I think one of the reasons he was targeted is because the Amish don't believe in suing anyone, and they don't believe in publicity. And so the government thought this will be a great double win. We get a high-profile farmer we get to take out and send a message to everybody, And we have someone who's not going to fight back because he's Amish and doesn't believe in fighting back legally or fighting back.
And how did you convince? How did you and others convince him to do that?
Because it was the future of his farm and the future of his family was at stake.
So they absolutely cornered him. He had no other choice.
That's exactly right. That, I think ultimately they made a mistake in that regard, that putting him into the corner forced him and the community to come to terms that this was really an existential threat to the Amish way of life. And ultimately an existential threat to all of us and our ability to eat food the way we want to control our own bodies and not have the government dictate it to us. But he's a sweetheart of a guy, quiet guy, short guy, soft-spoken, just sweet. And he was baffled by all of it. Like, I'm just trying to make food the way we've always made food, the way everybody needs it made, the way some people will live or die based on their ability to get access to it. Why am I having to deal with all this craziness from the government?
Well, he's in trouble because he's so successful, and if this takes off, it's game over, New World Order.
Precisely. He just kind of stumbled into it. He wasn't out to change the world. He was just out to get people the food they needed and make it the way his community has always made it. But in the process, he stepped right in the middle of a key obstacle to the system being able to co-opt and control the food supply the way they were aiming.
All right, stay there. You've got, again, just huge news on the poison shot front. Very good news straight ahead. Stay with us. Folks don't know that there's different types of milk that come out of cows, and the ones they bred for general milk consumption don't have the best protein. I get this great A2 Jersey cow, brown cow milk. It's like candy. I mean, it's better than a piece of chocolate cake, folks. It's just pure milk. What it does for your guts, everything else. Children that drink it just look like angels. And that's what the Amish knew before there was any, quote, science, that was the right milk, that was the right cow. And that's what Amos Miller has. That's what I get from outside Austin, Texas, in Lockhart. The crew gets it. We get it shipped in here. And they'd like to put the folks making that in jail. These people are sick and they're evil. And so finishing up with Amos Miller, it's all about control of our bodies. And if you know what they're doing to the meat now, spraying viral sprays on them, antibacterial viruses that then get into your gut and all these weird chemicals and sterilants so they can sell you rotten meat. It's just a total nightmare. Now Bill Gates has got his synthetic meat. Now they're growing cloned blood of celebrities and people are buying blood sausages of famous Hollywood people. I mean, it's just sick. And they're now trying to say that's all normal. Clone cows, clone pigs, clone chickens. But that what the Amish are doing, the Amish are fascinating, folks. 400-plus years ago in Switzerland and Germany, you had these Protestant groups being persecuted. So they sold their land, they got on ships, and they came to the United States, Canada, and South America. And my dad's volunteered for medical stuff down in South America, and he talks about it. And you'll be in the middle of nowhere, you know, crime, starving people, total hell. Then you hit another area, everything's clean, everything's nice, everybody's happy. And the surrounding groups are empowered by the Amish. And the Amish have never gotten politically involved, but now they're being so cornered after 400 years they're having to do it. And I'm telling you, what the Amish are doing is going to be the future. I'm not anti-technology, but the way it's been deployed, the way it's controlled, the whole mark of the beast, the Amish and folks like that are going to be the last people standing. Robert Barnes, closing comments on that subject and the great case that you have had a big victory up front on. And then I want to shift gears into the 35,000-foot view we were talking about off-air about the big awakening and what the globalists are going to do now that it's all coming out, criminal investigations in Italy and Germany and places in the United States like Florida, and the cases you're involved in with the Children's Health Defense Fund and Robert F. Kennedy Jr., it's like the dam broke now with Elon Musk and Twitter, and it's just all coming out. The CIA, FBI suppressing doctors. They knew day one this was poison. This whole thing was so damn premeditated. Give us the latest breaking news, but first, give us the 35,000-foot view on historically where we're at and what we now know actually happened.
Yeah, I think the cases like the Amos Miller case, cases like what's going on with the vaccines, cases like what's going on with the lockdowns, cases like what's going on around the globe and the Biden administration have woke up a lot of people that were otherwise slumber or asleep in ways that they, I don't think, anticipated. I think the anticipation was that this would help march onward, that people would accept lockdowns, that people would embrace the vaccines, that people would basically defer even further to the government's desire to complete control. You know, it's a lot, like, well, you just listen to Netanyahu's statements that he's made recently about how wonderful all of this is to treat people like lab rats for the purposes of massive control. And I get if you're in a society or culture like Israel, it's a very unique under constant threat mindset, but we don't need that for the rest of the world. And more Americans are waking up to that reality, challenging and contesting and questioning things that they had long since forgot to question and contest. Like, why does the U.S. Department of Agriculture get to determine and dictate what food I get to eat? That's not really their business. Why is the FDA overruling doctors and pharmacists and others about what's good for me medically? Why is it we're getting forced into taking a drug that we don't need and don't want for emergency that doesn't exist? And so and forcing kids and foster kids and others to be some of the unwilling and unwitting recipients of these drugs. So the very big win for Amos Miller at the outset of the case, so he's not serving jail time, doesn't lose the farm, has a chance to fight onward. The same as we have two cases pending, one with Children's Health Defense against FDA pending in Waco, Texas, about whether or not they get to try to – whether does the FBI get – the FDA gets a lie to children in order to be able to force a unwanted, dangerous drug that they call safe, effective, and a vaccine that's neither safe, effective, nor a vaccine.
That's right. Let's be clear. Explain it to them. In all the other drug ads, they've got to tell you at least some of the side effects. But in the Elmo shows and the TV programs targeting children, they say it's safe, it's wonderful, you'll die if you don't get it, Santa Claus says take it. That is illegal as hell.
Completely, completely. If a private company was doing a lot of what has been done for any other drug, they would be criminally prosecuted. And yet, you have the biggest criminal drug dealer in the history of man, and that is the Pfizer Corporation. Been more criminally fined than any drug company in history. They make any cartel look like a low-level street corner drug dealer by comparison. The number of people they've disabled, the number of people they've killed, the number of people their product has harmed far exceeds what they could possibly even think of doing with fentanyl and the Mexican drug cartels. And they, and this is Pfizer, the same Pfizer that is the primary principal beneficiary of the largesse connected to the vaccine that relates to the Brooke Jackson case and the case with Bobby Kennedy and I brought on behalf of Children's Health Defense against FDA in Waco. One case is for Brooke Jackson in Beaumont, Texas, on behalf of the American people, waiting on a judge to make a ruling there. Same with waiting on a judge to make a ruling in Waco, Texas. But both cases have helped waken up people so that more people are realizing that you cannot trust the FDA. The FDA is supposed to be in the labeling business. They're not in the pharmacy business. They're not in the medicine business. That's a local state prerogative. That's not a federal prerogative. That they have no business telling us what medicine to take. That their job is solely to make sure the label is accurate at representing what's in the drug, including what side effects exist. They have no legal right to say this drug is safe. They have no legal right to say this drug is effective. They have no legal right to call it a vaccine.
And Robert, expanding on that, 6 months ago, Robert Bourla of Pfizer and Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab were all, we've got to shut down, we've got to arrest, we've got to censor. But that didn't work. Now the dam's broken. What do you expect these Joseph Mengele 2.0s to do now that they've been caught red-handed?
I think what they're banking on is that nobody in a position of power will do anything about it, even though the criticism is mounting from the ordinary people in the public. There's more people, as a recent survey done by Kaiser, which showed that, in fact, the number of people who question vaccines for children, including other vaccines, has now gone up tenfold. It went from about 2 to 5% of the public to 20 to as high as 50% of the public. You see that.
And regular vaccine people uptake has gone way down, exactly. So it's fair to say this is blown up in their face sky high.
Completely. But you see that in the uptake rate. You see that so few people are continuing to get the boosters. So few people are having their young children get it. They know it. And what do they know? They know from their lived experience that despite all of the manipulation of the gatekeepers, like what the Twitter files have revealed, despite all of the efforts of allowing massive lies by the government, massive lies by Pfizer. I mean, Pfizer was running, and Moderna are running TV ads telling little kids they'll be superheroes if they take this drug, this dangerous drug that's killing and disabling people, that is more and more people, not just the Robert Malones and others and Peter McCullers, but more and more doctors, prominent scientists, are coming out and saying we should put an immediate halt to this vaccine now because it's becoming increasingly clear it causes more harm than it cures. And that's what ordinary people are realizing. And so all they're banking on at this point, the Pfizer's are their corrupt secret deals with various governments around the world, and they're banking on courts not having the courage to take on these big corrupt corporations. They're expecting federal courts to just continue, many of whom have been very pro-vaccine, unfortunately, many of whom have been very pro-lockdowns or late to the party in terms of turning back the constitutional clock on what these illicit activities were, that's the only thing they have going for them is they have a lot of political power, a lot of friends in Congress, a lot of friends in the Biden White House. That's it, because they're losing in the court of public opinion, and sooner or later that will translate to public officials making a difference.
All right, I want to come back in the final segment with Robert Barnes and wish him a great Christmas. And
I'm going to finish with a little Jay Dyer, but we're going to put up his whole interview. But here we go with a little bit of Jay Dyer about the power system again. Here we go with him.
So what are some of the institutions that the Fabian socialists, who were the ones that wanted to reform Marxism to make it allied with big capitalism? That's how you have to understand that Fabian socialism is a form of Marxism and communism that intentionally aligns itself with big money, with big state capitalism. And it comes out of these people that we've talked about in the Royal Society, the Milner Circle, Cecil Rhodes, the Royal Institute for International Affairs. That's the first thing they set up to really be sort of this, the inner core of what would become eventually the entities that we now know of as Bilderberg and its extension, Davos, or the World Economic Forum. So some of these entities include the League of Nations in 1915. The League of Nations was set up by Fabians. Then in 1918, we have the League of Nations Union, and then the League of Nations proper in 1919. International Labor set up in 1919. The World Court set up in 1920. Royal Institute for International Affairs, which becomes the Chatham House in 1920 in the UK. Notice that the Royal Institute for International Affairs was set up under Lord Curtis, Lionel Curtis, and other Fabians like John Maynard Keynes. So all of Keynesian economics is 100% tied up with Fabian socialism. And where do we get what comes out of John Maynard Keynes' idea of how we should do economics? Oh, the IMF. Exactly. Arnold Toynbee was one of the key ideologues who gave the impetus to this whole system of basically capitalist socialism, big state capitalism, big state socialism in a synthesis, a third way mix. And Arnold Toynbee himself, the famous British historian, was actually one of the directors of the Chatham House House of Studies. We get the Council on Foreign Relations set up in 1921 in the United States out of Woodrow Wilson's private intelligence group of the Inquiry. Woodrow Wilson was controlled from the background by his handler, Colonel Edwin Mandel House, who wrote a book called Philip Drew Administrator about being a handler to a president for the British banking elite. And that's precisely what he was, that is Colonel House, to Woodrow Wilson, who tried to push through these internationalist schemes and at that time was opposed by U.S. Senate and Congress, and so it didn't succeed. But the CFR is the complement to that. Don't go anywhere, because when we get back, I'm going to list more of these institutions and give you the history on where these secret deep state shadow government entities actually come from. This is the Alex Jones Show. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer. So we're talking about the institutions that were set up to promote throughout the world Fabian socialist style control. And of course, as we said, that's a reformed version of Marxism, which allies classical Marxism to monopoly capital. And so it's not exactly the same thing as fascism, but it's pretty close to fascism if you think about it, because it's really no different than the state being a corporate actor.